In fact, Jesus didn't do a lot of ministry in his hometown. But let me say this. But I say all that, and I'm going to say this. When you go to the bridge, you see what will happen when a hurting society has a big population. You can go to lots of cities and see bridges. There's places like that. Here's the situation. We do have the same thing here. We don't have a 200,000 population, but there are conglomerates of people per capita here the same as the bridge. Here's what I would challenge us and me as well, and the same thing about prison. It's a lot easier for me to go into prison and preach and get the high fives and leave and not have to deal with the problems than when an inmate gets out and have to deal with some of the problems that inmates might have. And it's the same thing about addiction. It's a devil of a thing. It's the devil. And it's one thing to go take a picture with people and say it's awesome, but when they sit amongst us and we don't like their behavior and we don't like being lied to and we don't like being manipulated, we're tired of them showing up, we don't take it as good. And what I think the Lord wants to show us is, in this, me saying all this, is when we go to the bridge, let that inspire us. Let's spread some love down there. But let's pray for patience to deal with the same people living under the bridge that live here that we don't have the patience for because we have to deal with their junk all the time. It's the same thing as an evangelist versus a pastor. An evangelist comes in and whoops up the crowd and he leaves. Then the pastor has to deal with everybody complaining all the time, right? So what I'm saying is drugs and all this stuff that the devil is using to tear society down is real. And those people who are going through that are going to be sometimes like hugging cacti. That's plural for cactus. And it's tough. The day-to-day grind of loving cacti is tough. You get thorns all in you. But that is what we're called to do. So I would challenge us, let's be a little more patient to those people in this community that get on your nerves because you say, what somebody else, I forget who it was, maybe Alice, I don't know, said, I'm just tired of it. It's the same thing over and over. They lie to me. They manipulate me. I'm enabling them. I'm just tired of it. We got to love them anyway. There's a hurting, sick society, and we see these people every day, and we got to love them anyway. Because if you're on the front lines, we see this stuff every day. What really inspired me about Knoxville was the fact that there were so many in one place. But if we'll open our eyes, we see it every day. You and I, we see it every day. You see it every day. And so we've got to be mindful of that, and we got to use that inspiration. And we got to use that inspiration when we get excited about Friday nights in prison, when we got to come back and deal with somebody who lies to me on the street. You know, I got to deal with that. But that's part of the job. That's part of the job. It ain't about a circus. It ain't about a show. It's about loving people when they get out for years and years and years and putting up with being lied to and loving anyway. That's what it's about. So anyway, that was free. That's free preaching. Happy Father's Day. I'm going to share just for a minute this is not a Father's Day message in the sense that I think people don't like Father's Day messages sometimes, because if you have a good relationship with your father, you love a Father's Day message, maybe. But if you have a bad relationship or no father in your life or a lot of scars or a lot of hurt, then it can kind of be like, an open wound and pouring vinegar or something on it. We're not going to do any of that, okay? I think God has a message about something that would apply to mothers, fathers, and kids, but it's something about what a father is supposed to be. But really, we all are fathers of something. Cleta, you're a father and a mother. And I'll explain that in just a minute. Because I think, and I'm going to read some scripture real quick, but when you think of fathers, what do you think of? Somebody help me. I need help. Huh? Guidance. What else? Provider. What else? Protector. What else? Leader, I said, or heard love. What else? Teacher. What else? So what is the purpose of a father? And I mean biblically, but also societally. And whether you've had a good father or not, or whether you are a good father or not, we're all kind of works in progress, and we all need our children's patience. And But what is the purpose of a father? But what does that mean? To lead, to guide? I've heard messages, and I probably preached them, about Joseph being a good father in the Bible. What was Joseph's role, though? I mean, we don't know a whole lot about Joseph. But what we do know about Joseph, what was his role or purpose? Well, we all have that, but what was his purpose as a father to Jesus? To train him for a trade. How about this? What is your child? I mean, and I know we're all of us, we're going to, this, God's going to bring this together. What is your child that represents you? You that are fathers or mothers, what does your child represent to you? Your seed, God's gift. What is your child? The purpose of God, your dream, your God dream, your God purpose, your legacy, your destiny, right? And in fact, I would say this, every father or mother, you want your child to do better than you did, right? Because they're your dream, that you want them to go further than you have. You want them to do more greater things than you have. I want my son to preach, and my daughters, to preach in places that I've never got to preach, to love people I've never got to love, to take Jesus further than I've ever. And they should pray that their children be the same. It's not about me here and them here. I want them. They're my God dream. That's why that Joseph's job, he was the father of the earthly father, of course. He had a heavenly father and the real father. He was a stepdaddy of Jesus, the King of Kings. His job, what do we know about him that he did good? He listened to God in a dream. He took Jesus. He took him to Egypt. He hid him away. He hid away the seed. He hid away the promise so it could not be extinguished or destroyed until it was time to blossom. It was his job to enable the package or the purpose of God to be delivered. So our job as fathers, our job even as mothers, but as fathers, is to protect the seed that God has entrusted us with, to put them in the position to be everything that God has intended them to be. So what you see when you see a child, come here, Lily. Hurry, hurry. I'm not going to make you talk. Just come here. Turn around. She don't want to, she's shy, but she's getting out of that. I rebuke that saying. I said, that was a devil. You are not shy. You are a warrior of God, and I'm not going to say that.
Yeah.
Smack my hand. Smack it. I can tell you ain't never whipped me before. But there's a first time for everything. God has put purpose in her life. Come here. I know you're an adult, but you're a kid. You ain't that grown. I promise you. Turn around. Purpose. I'm not going to embarrass everybody, but purpose. You can stand up. Purpose. Kids, purpose. All you kids. Now, their father's job is to do their best, their part. Whether we as fathers do it, that's another question. But it's to do our part to enable the destiny of God in them to come forth. Not to do anything that would interfere with, deter, destroy, delay the plan of God that God has for them. It's kind of like Santa Claus. This is a gift of God, and the daddy's job is to deliver the gift on Christmas morning. When Jesus was ready, when God said go, it was up to Joseph to have put Jesus in a position to, when he was ready to go and the father and mother said go, he went. But if Joseph hadn't went to Egypt and listened to God, then Herod might have killed Jesus as a baby. And so the father had a very important role in protecting the seed. Thank you. You can sit down. Now, you say, well, I'm not a father. I'm a mother, or I'm a single dude, or I'm a dude, or whatever it is. Here's the deal. We all have a seed inside us. Now, some of us have physical children we're talking about. But even if you don't have any children, you have a destiny, a seed of destiny inside you. And we have a job to do. Your spiritual fathers have a job to do. That's why don't criticize when people get in your grill. Because your spiritual fathers, the people God has set you under, are responsible to the big daddy for your soul and your purpose. So if you mess up, they're gonna deal with, God will deal with you too. But he's first gonna go to this cat and this cat and say, what did you do with my child? What did you do with the gift I have put you under? And that's why daddy spank kids sometimes. Because they need a spanking. Oh, Lord, forgive me. So we all have a part to play. You all, in a sense, are spiritual mothers giving birth and spiritual fathers in protecting the seed that God has for your life. The book of Jeremiah says we all have a plan and purpose for our life. And so our job, we want our legacy to match our destiny, Johnny. Everything that God has put inside me to come forth, my dream, my goal, is that come to pass. Now what the devil does, he comes to steal, kill, and destroy. He's a dream killer. You know why they shot Martin Luther King? Because the devil always kills dreams. But he couldn't kill the dream. You could take down the dreamer, but you can't kill the dream of God. The devil's job is this. The devil has no authority to kill you, the purpose inside you. Remember what Jesus did? He took back the keys to death, hell, and the grave. God has your purpose in his hand. And the devil can't take it. It's like the Dikembe Mutombo. It's like a five-year-old trying to block the Dikembe Mutombo. That five-year-old's just jumping up and down. The Dikembe's up here, one hand going, no, 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 not in my house. Not my child. Not my child. You get away from my child, devil. But what the devil tries to do is get in our heads and tell us that the dream is dead. That purpose that you once had, it's too late. That we've squandered it. That something we've done along the way has irrevocably, tore up, destroyed that purpose. And so now what we look at ourselves, because the devil tells us this, as plan B's. Or plan C's or plan Z's. In other words, sometimes the devil will tell us, well, there was this, God had a plan A for you, but you messed that up. And now the best you can hope for is plan B. Let me tell you something. On that cross, there were no plan B's. There's only plan A. And I'm here to tell you that voice that gets inside your head and tells you you're a plan B is the voice of a liar, because everything comes out of his mouth is a lie. That you are a plan A. And if you have a heartbeat, then you are still plan A. You are still number one. You still have that purpose. You still have that drive. And our job is to make sure that comes to pass on our earth. To make sure everything you're meant to be. That's what your mom and dad want for you. It's not to be a stud football player. Be okay. Be okay. It's not to outlive Pastor Heath. You'll never do it. I'm just kidding. You probably already do it. I'm old. But it's to be the man of God. And all these milestones, that the ball and the proms and the things of life, they're just steps along the way, part of that, little parts. But it's what we can glean from that. When we walk in God's purpose and are unleashed, not only the proms and the ball, the beatings, the lonely times, the sad times, It's still all a part of that package. The addictions, the things that the devil meant to destroy you, God's going to use for his glory. And so, gosh, I don't even have time to preach this message. So I want to talk just briefly about a man in the Bible who was in charge of a destiny or a dream. And he was a father. And he had a child on his watch. A little tiny child, not a 30-40-year-old person. We talk about that. Well, you know, when your kids, I just hate to tell you this, you're always their parent. But you've got a limited window of when you really have full control. 18 years. Now then you can pray, you can influence, but your ability to control what goes on in your house leaves at 18. It does. We have different situations when you have older kids and younger kids. As far as Jake goes, he'll do what I say. He'll go to church every Sunday, and you know what? And Wednesday, and every other time, Sunday night. And you know why? Because he's been trained that way. That's all he knows. He don't even think about it anymore. Because that's my job. I'm dad. That's my job, is to deliver that package. And I'm going to deliver that package. That's my job. There ain't no excuse. He don't call me on Monday morning and say, I don't want to go to school today, Dad. I just don't feel like it. I'm not feeling it. I just don't want to go. I don't like it. I don't like it there. Tough, get your big boy boots on. Go to school or I'm going to, right? And you do it long enough and that's all they know. But if you don't do it long enough, I always say this. What he does or doesn't do is on me as under 18. Over 18, Lord, if they knew this stuff. But when I was under 18, I did what they said. There was no option. And you know what didn't kill me? And I went away, and they said, oh, I don't want to burn him out. This is the result of burning out. It's preaching the gospel. Maybe we shouldn't burn him out on school. Let's let them all drop out at 12. Because they don't want to. But anyway, I digress. There was a man, the whole point is we all have these children under our watch if you have children. And but we also have God's plan for our lives under our watch. And God gives us the responsibility to see those things come to pass. And there's a man in the Bible named Jairus who had a daughter that was very sick. And I want to talk about him for just a minute, okay? And then we're going to be quick as I can. I'm on borrowed time. Amen. If we knew that, though, we'd be a little bit more. I want to read from Luke 8, and here's what it says. And by the way, in Luke 8, what a powerful day. Let me tell you what Jesus' day looked like. Let me tell you what Luke 8 looked like. Jesus said, let's go across the lake. So he gets in a boat with his disciples. He goes to sleep. Winds and waves and a storm and a tempest about takes him out. They wake him up. He speaks to the winds and the waves. He speaks to the storms and it stops. Then they get across the island. They met a demoniac, a man with a legion of demons in him. And he's going crazy and cutting himself and naked and running around the graveyard. And Jesus casts all those demons into pigs. And then he gets back in the boat, comes back to the other side, touches a woman who's been bleeding for 12 years at the point of death, heals her, and then he goes to Jairus' daughter and he raises a girl from the dead. That's a pretty good day. In one day, Jesus spoke authority over nature, over the demons of hell, over sickness, and over death, and he gave us the same authority to do every single day too. That's a good day. He showed his dominion over the elements, the storms, the demons of hell, of sickness and of death in one chapter in the Bible. There's enough salvation. There's enough power in this chapter to change your life. So he gets back across the water from the demoniac. And you know, the tempest is, he's went through the storm and he's took the demoniac, made him an evangelist. demoniac says, I want to go with you, Jesus. And Jesus says, no. You need to stay here and show the people what Jesus has done, what God's done for you. So he goes back across the water and he gets there. And here's what I'm going to read, Luke 8, verse 40. On the other side of the lake, the crowds welcomed Jesus because they had been waiting for him. Have we been waiting for him? Have you been waiting for him? Then a man named Jairus. Thank you for standing for the reading of the word. Thank you. Thank you. What's funny? That's a good peer pressure. Thank you. Then a man named Jairus, a leader of the local synagogue, a very religious guy, a crowd of people that Jesus didn't roll with too much. A leader of the local synagogue came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come home with him. His only daughter, say only, was about 12 years old and dying. As Jesus went with him, he was surrounded by the crowds. And a woman in the crowd who had been suffering for 12 years with constant bleeding, and she could find no cure. Coming up behind him, she touched the fringe of his robe immediately, and the bleeding stopped. You may be seated. I'm going to just preach out of that a little bit. So, here we've got a father who I think does a pretty good thing. His daughter is dying, and he comes to Jesus. We all do that, right? And there's people in this room that have lost children. I don't know if anybody's lost a young child, and if you do, I pray for you. I know we've had people who've lost older children, and I pray for you. And I know we've had people here lost their fathers, and I pray for you. We've had people lose their spouses in here. I pray for you. But this man did something we all probably would do. We think that's a good father. His little girl is sick, and he comes to Jesus. But now let's think about what he's had to overcome to get to Jesus. Something starts with the word P. He's had to overcome something start with the word P, pride. Because he's a leader of a local synagogue. He's a religious man. If you read the scriptures, Jesus would call out the Pharisees and Sadducees and the leaders of the law. He would call them out. I mean, y'all think I don't preach hard. I preach like a baby compared to Jesus. Most people couldn't sit under Jesus. That's why there was only 12 of them cats. Most people couldn't sit under him. Because, I mean, he would just point blank. I mean, can you imagine Keith me coming to you and saying, you're a devil. You get behind me. I mean, you got to have some guts to walk with that dude, right? Yeah, you can't be a little thin-skinned punk and walk with that dude. Because he knew thin-skinned punks wouldn't change the world. He didn't want somebody that's going to quit on him. He wanted somebody that could take some hard preaching. That could take some leadership. We got enough little wimpy Christians that want somebody to pat them on the head all the time. We're talking about changing the world, and you're not going to do that with head pats. You'll do it more with a tail kick than you will a head pat. I promise you. And so Jesus was rough with these folks, and he would preach hard at them, and he would call them, you know, hypocrites and just all kinds of bad names and things. Jesus was tough on these people for good reason. And so here this guy is, all of his crowd, all of his posse, don't really run with Jesus. They look at Jesus not just as too hard, but they look at Jesus as a hypocrite, as a false prophet. Some of them, they're trying to catch him into blasphemy. I mean, they think he's pretty much a blasphemer. I mean, that's what's going on. That was the religious crowd. Yeah, they called him a cult. Let me say, this is another freebie. Did you know what a pastor is a father, but you know what he does? He's not the superintendent, he's not the architect. There's a superintendent of a job, and they get an architect to draw up plans. But then they get these cats called foremen. Foremen's paid a little more. Steve, was you a foreman? And your job was to implement that plan. It is your blame. Listen, When I go in front of a judge, I can't say secretary messed up. It's my fault because the secretary's under my watch. It is your fault. And, I mean, it is. If you're a boss, Keith, it's your fault. You can't blame another. If you do, you're not a good leader. It's always your fault. What goes on in my home is my fault. What goes on in this ministry to a degree is my fault. That's why we take it personal. And so then the foreman takes his plans, and all these people show up for work. And there's my drywall man, Michael. And Michael shows up and says, "Foreman, I want to run electrical today." And I say, "Michael, I ain't getting nobody killed. I'm sorry. You're not the guy that God is, that my plan says is to lay electrician the wire today, electrical wire. But you're my drywall man. I can use a good drywall man." And here comes another guy. Here's Steve. And Steve's a good roofer. He comes to me with all this roofing experience. He says, "I'm going to do concrete today, foreman." I said, "Steve, I got concrete guys. I don't have a roofer like you. That's what I need. Now, if all those people come to me and I just do whatever they want that day and that house ends up looking like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, then that superintendent is going to call me in the office and say, 'I gave you a grand design, a grand plan to build a masterpiece. And I gave you the instructions on how to build it. And you didn't do your job because you listened to the people below you instead of the man above that gave the plan.'" Now what happens? What happens if Steve don't show up work Sunday? Well, the pastor, you better not give him a hard time about not showing up for work. Or it don't get done. You see, when you realize that we're building something here, that God has entrusted this ministry to build something here, you realize why you got a pesky pastor. Because let me tell you something. Keith, if your man didn't show up to work tomorrow, you'd have a problem. Wouldn't you? Or it'd be okay if they just didn't feel like coming. I mean, there's excused absences. People can miss for good reasons. They get vacation days where everybody gets, you know. But what if they just stop showing up for a week or two? Or what if they come in and just start bad-mouthing you and telling you you didn't know what you're doing as a foreman? And how would that affect the morale of your job? You couldn't do your job. But we're not just mining coal or trying cases here. We've been called to take the ones that are hurting, the ones that are addicted, your children, your loved ones. We've been called to build a pretty big house. And so that's why this stuff's so serious. That's why we take this stuff serious. That's why that pastor is really concerned about those plans getting on. Oh, that pesky pastor, no. He just knows that we're building something here. And it's got to get built. Right, Johnny? It's got to get built. So this man, his 12-year-old daughter, we know a couple things. She probably had been gradually sick. How do you know that? I can't say that for sure. But she's 12 years old, and she's in bed. Okay, so, you know, if you fall outside and bump your head, you're falling outside and you're bleeding, you bump your head. But if you've got an illness that's got you in bed, then there's this idea that for some time she's been sick, right? It's quite possible and probable, I would say, that there's probably been a tug of war going on inside this father's heart between his pride and his concern over his daughter. Meaning this, he waited to the last possible minute to go to Jesus. How many times in our life do we wait to the last possible minute to go to Jesus? We don't go to Jesus when it's sort of a little bit bad sometimes. We go to Jesus when it's all blown up and destroyed, right? I mean, this man very well could have been playing this game of chicken where he's like, she'll get better. She'll get better. We got our religious way. She'll get better. But I hear there's this guy that heals the sick. Ooh, but we don't like him too much. If they catch me rolling with Jesus, if they catch me hanging out with those lost group people, woo, man, I don't want to get caught dead with those people. If they catch me going to Jesus, it will make me look bad. And so there's this game of chicken where you sit back in the bed. She's going to get better. Oh, she's not getting better. Maybe I should go. No, I can't. I can't. Pride. How many times does our pride keep us from getting into our destiny? Where we look at our own accomplishments. He was an accomplished leader. Why does he have to go to somebody else? When our own pride, well, I know more about the Bible than anybody. Good, and you better have a lot of fruit. I better see about 1,000 people follow you to church on Sunday. Or else it's just... So this man would have had pride, and this pride was probably preventing him from going sooner. But he got to a point of desperation. And we say this here, and I say this all the time. I can't disciple want to. And that's the problem 99% of, well, I shouldn't say that. It's not 99%. That's the wrong thing. That's just a slang term. It's the problem a lot of times with discipleship. What I end up doing is discipling want to instead of how to. I can't disciple want to. It's got to be burning in you so hard. That's all you can think about. And then if you got that, then I can help you with the one, how to. Not by my might or knowledge, but by the word of the scripture, what the Holy Spirit empowers me or gives me word to give you. But that want to becomes sometimes a point of desperation. When you're truly desperate enough to break. And I've heard people deal with recovery a lot of times say, they're not ready. I'm going to say something that's going to hurt somebody's feelings. There may be people in this room, but you're not ready. You're not low enough yet. Because when you get low enough, you'll be ready. And I can preach, and I can text you 38 times, and I can do whatever. But if you're not ready, it's like that kid over 18, right? I can influence, but you got to be ready. Really ready. And I'm not saying to beat anybody down. But I'm saying sometimes that pattern you've had in our life, we've all had in our life, and I've been there where we come to Jesus and we get excited for a week and then we go back. We come to Jesus, but are we really desperate? Because I know a time that I was desperate. Do you remember a time you were desperate? Because everything changed when you got desperate. Everything changes when you get desperate. When you're not desperate, you're mad about everything. But when you're desperate, he's the only thing. So that old Jairus, that old daddy, finally got desperate. And he went and made that trip walking. And I imagine, in my head, I just see it like, how many times did he start and stop? I mean, you ever see, you know, I mean, I maybe start going to church. How many times did he get to the edge and all the while his daughter lies dying, his dream lies dying? How many times do we come close? My pride. Oh, man, I got so many other friends. And I got, ooh, my social status. Ooh, my weekends. And ooh, my... Man, you know what? People are going to watch that podcast, and they're going to make fun of you, and they're not going to treat you like you're the uppity guy you think you're supposed to be anymore, because they're going to see you screaming and yelling on that podcast. And you don't think I hear quotes like that? It's your pride versus your call. It's your pride versus your destiny. I've literally heard that. Not dignified. But when you get desperate, their opinion ain't going to matter about you anymore. When you get desperate, you ain't trying to impress nobody no more. When you get desperate, you'll mean what you say in prison on the outside. When you get desperate, you'll mean what you say in the pulpit on the outside. When you get desperate. Jenny always, when I would get in a flat spot, she says, "How's your God time?" But that's one thing she says. But another famous thing of Jenny's quotes is, "Are you still desperate?" Because if I lose my desperation, things go south for me. This is a warship, not a cruise ship. This ain't a love boat. We are called to love people, but the love boat, they went on there and tried to hook up on Friday nights on TV, Saturday nights when I was a kid. We ain't the love boat here. We're a warship, and we got guns, and we're taking out some people. We're taking out the devils of this world. We're going at addiction. We put a flag up on a hill, and it's been hell ever since because we're poking fights at the devil, and we ain't backing down. That was the same night. That was Saturday night at 10. That was Fantasy Island. But it's the same. We're not Fantasy Island either. Zipline, boss. Zipline. No. There's a good story. On Saturday nights in their unholy days, when they were not as Christian as they are now. I'm just kidding. We would get together as a family. Mom would make veggie trays and bake cookies, and they would watch their shows and I'd half asleep, but it was Fantasy Island on Saturday night and Love Boat. So that's true. You just got them a little mixed up. Ricardo Montalban. All right, anyway. And for all the people under like 45, you're like, these people are crazy. I have no idea what they're talking about. They tried to hook up all the time, is all I remember. They had Isaac. Isaac was the bartender, and Captain Stu. We're getting way out of here, Dad. I gotta reel this baby. Will Wright gave me a good fishing pole. I gotta reel that thing back in, Will. Well, that's a good thing to know. So Captain Stewing ended up preaching. Hallelujah. That's good. All right. Well, let's get back to here. So Jairus comes to Jesus and he says, "Will you come to my house?" He got desperate enough to give up everything he was comfortable in to go to Jesus and ask for his help. That's real. I mean, he was, and Jesus, I mean, you know, Jesus. Don't you think, how many people come to him that he didn't go to their house? I'm not saying Jesus wouldn't because he didn't love them, but I know that Jesus probably, there's only 24 hours a day and he only had 3 years of ministry. He walked through a throng of people. He didn't go to everybody's house that day. Only so much chicken you could eat. But there had to be something in this man's desperation. Because there was something this other woman's touch of desperation. There was something in this man's plea of desperation that Jesus could tell he meant it. Because Jesus diverted his time to say, "Yeah, I'll go home with you. I'll go home with you." Jesus will go home with anybody in this room. But he knows if he's really welcome or not. He knows who's going to invite him in, like at the Pharisee's table. And not giving him the common decency to wash his feet or anoint his feet. He knows who means it. He knows which of our houses are welcoming. You ever go to somebody's house, they invite you in, or you don't really get invited in, or maybe one of the spouses, I can think of a story, invite you in, the other one doesn't seem like they're about it as much. I don't know. But you know how you walk into a house and you can tell you're not welcome there? There's times I believe Jesus comes to our house and I don't know that he always feels welcome. I don't know that we've got the place hospitable for him sometimes. I don't know that we've got the time for him sometimes. I used to have a grandpa and I loved him and I wish I had these times back, but he would just show up at my house nonstop, I mean, like no warning ever, and it was always the worst time. He never called. He would never call and say, "Hey, can I come over at 7 to dinner?" I would have done it any time. But he would show up when I already had dinner plans, like at 6:55, right? I mean, that's just how my grandpa was. He didn't believe in phone calls, correct? He would come at the worst possible time. I wish I had those times back, by the way. But it'd be like, oh, I'd see the car. Oh, no, not tonight. It's not that I loved him so much, but it was like the worst time. My schedule was just too busy for his love. My schedule was just too big. I had too many important things to do. Boy, I'd like to have those times back. I think I'd have canceled a few dinners. I think I'd have canceled a few things. How many times has he come to our house and it's not hospitable? He knows we don't want him there. We want him on our time, don't we, T-Dot? We want him on our time. When it's convenient for us. Yeah. And so, something in this man's plea, Jesus could tell he meant it. And so Jesus went home with him. But here's the problem. I got to be real quick. Here he is going to save this girl. And this dad has waited to the last minute. She's literally dying. She's 12 years old. She's a child. We can, you know, if I died tomorrow, they'd miss me. But you guys would say, okay, he's 50. That's a little young, but he's had a good life. But there's something about a child. A child. They're not even grown. They're not even been in love yet. They're not even been to the prom. They've not even played a sport. They're just a child. It hurts us, right? And all of a sudden, as time is of the essence, this woman comes. And here's the deal. The leader of the synagogue would have viewed this woman as unclean, unworthy. Do you realize under the law, people who had this type of blood disorder were considered unholy, unclean, and they were being punished by their thoughts, by God, for something they had done. This must be a really bad person. And here's the problem, Gerald. I got this kid who's innocent. My need is greater. My need is greater than your need. Because you're not clean. And here I am, and I don't have but one second. I don't have a second to give. And this woman fights through the crowd. And she's been bleeding for 12 years. And so we know that she's been a menstrual age at least 12 years, probably older. And she's been bleeding nonstop. And she's sick, and she's anemic, and all this stuff. And it says she spent all of her money to try to get well, and she can't get well. And the church turns their eyes on her because the religious folks say she's unclean. She's not worthy. How dare she sit in a pew? Where should she sit? The next time we catch ourselves saying, how dare they come to church? Where would you have them be? Where would you have them be? Tell me where you want them to be. And she pushes her way through, and she touches the tassel of his prayer shawl, his garment, and he stops and he says, whoa, somebody touched me. And they said, Lord, what are you talking about? There's all kinds of people touching you. There's a mob of people bouncing up and down. But he stops. I want you to hear this. He stops. And I think if we're J. Ira sometimes, that's where we have a problem with Jesus. He stopped. He's supposed to be coming with me because this baby's about to die. I don't have a second for this unclean woman. Her need's not as great as mine. I need Jesus more than she does. I deserve Jesus more than she does. I deserve promotion more than he does. And Jesus stops. I need Jesus now. And he stopped. And Jesus has this discussion with this woman. And you know what the vinegar in the wound was, PJ? This old unclean lady, bleeding for years. We don't even know her name. He called her daughter. But what did that remind J. Iris of? I'm the one with the daughter. I'm the one with the sick daughter. What are you talking about? She's a daughter too. She ain't nobody's daughter. It's my daughter. That's what we're doing here, Jesus. We're walking to my daughter. She's the only one that matters. Jesus called her daughter. When you imagine the bells in Jairus' brain. Whoa. My daughter's dying. And you're sitting here talking to this unclean sinner. Sinner. You waste all your time with these addicts and sexual immoral people, immoral people, and all this stuff. You're wasting your time, Pastor. My need is more. I'm holier. I'm better. Don't you waste your time with these bad people. It all goes to church up there. Jesus stopped. And during that stop, here's the kicker. A messenger came from Jairus' house and said, "It ain't no use coming now." I told you there's always a liar. You got to decide which voice you want to hear. Because a messenger came. Let me tell you something. Every time God's trying to do something in your life, there'll come a messenger. It might come on a text. It might come on a Facebook. It might just come in your mind. But there's a messenger that'll come. Every time you're about to get your breakthrough, there's a messenger that talks into your life. And you got to decide, which voice do we listen to? And so that messenger... The messenger says, "Don't come. She's dead. Don't continue, PJ. Your destiny's already done." That's what the messenger says. Don't, Holly, 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 Holly. You're wasting your time. That's what the messenger says. You are what you are. You're always going to be what you're always going to be. And that's when you turn and say, "I am daughter." Right? The messenger tells something that at first glance appears true. And that's the problem. The devil uses half-truths. And a half truth's a half a lie, and a half life is always half a lie is always a lie. And so he tells him, "No use coming, your daughter's dead." He tells us that all the time. No use in coming. No use in bothering pastor. No use in discipleship. No use in going to that church. No use going to that altar again. No use raising your hands. No use testifying. No use trying to stay clean. No use trying to be positive. No use loving on people. No use smiling to your husband. No use smiling to your wife. No use doing anything positive, because it's all too late. You've squandered it. It's dead. It's dead. And so Jairus, as a father, had a decision to make. Which voice do I listen to? Because Jesus said he was coming to my house. But the messenger said, "Don't do it. There's no reason to." And we all have a decision to make when we're on the verge of our miracle. And I think the problem we have... They say comparison is the thief of joy. We spend all of our time. Jairus had a decision to focus on Jesus or focus on the lady. See, the lady could have been inspiration to him. Instead of discouraging Jairus, that lady could have been inspiration, because he could have said, "Wow, if he'll heal that lady, he'll heal my daughter." Right? Or that same thing, depending on Jairus' mindset, could be a stumbling block. Because he could have said, "Now my daughter died. He chose this one over mine. He gave their miracle when I need mine. He promoted her when I wanted promotion. He could have compared himself to the lady. And then listening to the messenger, he could have turned from Jesus and walked back to death and missed his miracle or breakthrough. Remember what I said the purpose of the Father was, is to ensure the maturation of your destiny or your seed. He would have gave up his seed or his destiny out of his discouragement or his reaction to somebody else's miracle. And that's a big problem for us if we're honest. Some people look at other people's promotions and blessings and they love them for it. But other times or other people, we look at them and we compare ourselves and we get angry or mad or hurt or disappointed or jealous. And we say, why did they get their miracle and I didn't get mine? But maybe yours is coming. And maybe we're waiting to see what voice we listen to. Jairus had a decision to make. And so Jairus decided to go on back home with Jesus. Very important decision. That's the only reason we know Jairus' name. Only reason that he has a legacy that we all follow, that we can preach a Father's Day message out of, is because what he did on the battlefield that day, he made a decision. What will I do in this moment of my disappointment? My disappointment. This is a moment of disappointment. He came to Jesus with a sick girl, and while he's sitting there waiting on Jesus, the girl dies. This is a disappointment. This is not how I saw this thing playing out. I wanted advance really quick. I need it quick. I don't got time to wait on Jesus. But he didn't know that wait, that Jesus was creating a miracle that would change his life and millions and millions and millions of lives for centuries and thousands of years. That for thousands of years, people would preach and talk and get encouragement from Jairus and his daughter. You know what? Jairus has preached more messages than Billy Graham's ever dreamed to preach. He probably preaches more in a month than Billy Graham ever preached. Because there's gospel preaching all over this globe every day. And how many of them talk about this message? So, Jesus went to his home and... Well, first of all, he told Jairus what happened because he could see Jairus was upset. And Jairus said, he told her what happened. And Jesus said, don't be afraid. Just have faith and she'll be healed. In a moment of your discouragement, I would say this to you. And I'm not talking about necessarily, you got to understand, not everybody in here is going to have a 12-year-old sick daughter that dies. I mean, I pray not, okay? But we all have dreams that die inside us, or try to die inside us. And so what I think Jesus would be telling you right now is, look, I know you're scared. I know this delay is hard, and I know you see others advance, and I know that my time's not like your time, and I know it don't look like it's going the way that you want it to go, and it won't, but I want to tell you this. Don't be scared. Just have some faith, and this purpose will come to pass. This seed will be birthed. This seed shall live. The seed that you have in here today, that the devil, the messenger, sent is dead, it will live. And you as a father, I don't care if you're a woman in this room, you will see as a father, a spirit, you'll see this seed come to pass. Get planted. Get under Jesus. Listen to the foreman occasionally, the spiritual fathers that you have on this planet. And see what God's going to do in your life. See what would happen if you made yourself malleable and available. That's two different words. There's more available than there is malleable. And no matter how malleable you are, if you're not available, I can't use you. You can be the best carpenter in the world, Henry. If you don't show up on when I need you, when you told me you're going to show up, what good are you to me, right? You got to be available, and you got to be malleable, usable. And so he had to have some faith. And so they arrived at the house, and Jesus wouldn't let anyone go in except Peter, James, and John, and the father and the mother. And the house was filled with people weeping and wailing. We got too many people in our lives that are weeping and wailing. Tell us how bad it is and how miserable it is. Something my wife and I talked about a long time ago. You remove the misery out of your life and you get happier all of a sudden. Because there's people that want to attach themselves to you just because they'd rather, they want somebody to be miserable with. That's all they want. They say, I'm your friend. No, you just want somebody to be miserable with and negative with. If you're my friend, you encourage me and you celebrate me. And it's amazing when you become positive how those people just suddenly move away. You don't tell them to leave. They don't want to be around you. Because when they call and say, boy, everything stinks, then you know, you say, well, I think it's great. I love Jesus, and I got a happy marriage, and I got a happy life, and everything's awesome. And they hang up the phone, and they won't call you for 6 months. Because, and ain't that the truth? Is it not the, then testify it's the truth. Stand up and testify it's the truth. They say, we as pastors typically get new friends like we're mean or something. No. But they're dragging you down. And here's the deal. You don't have to kick them off your boat. You just get on the right boat and they ain't going to get on with you. You ain't got to kick off nobody off your boat. You just get on the right boat and see who gets in. If they'll get in with you, then come on, more the merrier. Come on, boys. We're not trying to leave nobody behind. We just want to come with us. Just get positive people. Because if we stay back, we're enabling their negativity. And we're creating our own. And so Jesus took out everybody in the room except the ones he knew he could count on. Important point. There's certain places you're going to go that you don't want everybody there with you. Certain people that will cause you to get hurt. I know Henry does contracting type work too, and there's certain dangerous jobs, Henry, that if you got somebody on the other side of it that don't know what to do, and they'll get people hurt. Grant came from a place one time where if you have people around you that didn't know what to do, and you get people hurt. Keith in a coal mine. There's certain jobs. If you put somebody that don't know what to do, and they'll get somebody hurt. See, we're not just playing church. We are the church. We don't just talk about getting out and doing stuff and talk about Jesus all the time. We believe in being Jesus and doing the things that he's called us to do. And that means we go into dark places. We go into dangerous places. We go into prisons and we go into homeless places where people might have knives. And I know we took the kids there one time. It wasn't a bridge trip. We were just down there. And you know, we said, we're going to go down there on Sunday or Saturday morning and give out some donuts. And we were down there, man. We saw a guy get stabbed right there like this far. The kids got in the car and locked the door. And I'm like, I'm out there trying to do something, you know, and we've been called to go and just, social services ought to be called. No, social services ought to be called for people who won't take their kids into those places and show them the power they got, that we have power over the devil. We have power over the devil. I'm tired of putting kids in bubbles and trying to protect them from the world. I say we burst the bubbles, fill them with fire, and send them out to change the world. So all those people were wheeling and weeping and wailing, and that was not a bad thing. That was a thing that was meant to be respectful. Because we all mean respect when we come to people. There is a time, the Bible says, for all things, there's a time for weeping. There is a time for that. There's a time just to be grateful. I mean, I'm bad to be a fixer. My wife would tell you this. Probably a bad husband in that aspect sometimes. In that if she's upset or sad or whatever, I don't really give her that grief time. Or that, Dad don't either. Okay. I'm like, let's fix it. I'm going to pray. Let's fix it right now. (sighs) That's how I love. But, you know, I got to learn to give people the moment, because I'm a little bit like Steve. Like, I'm hard on myself that way, too. I've never allowed myself to grieve. And by the way, Steve's the most radical dude. I told, you know, everybody thinks I'm this big radical. I probably got hundreds of I mean, you all just see a few. And everybody thinks I'm radical. I don't have one on my head, and I just realized that you have one on your head. So Steve and T-Dot are the only really radical people we got in the room today. I'm just a pretender. Because I said, Val, Steve quit wearing a hat, and that's through me. I like Steve's hats. She said he's showing off a new tattoo. I said, tattoo on his head? He's got a lawnmower on his head. That's awesome, man. That's awesome. So he's not cortically challenged. He's just got a lawnmower keeping it trimmed neat up there. That's all it is. But Steve, I'm hard on myself that way. And I don't allow myself sometimes time to... I'm hard on myself. And sometimes that makes me hard on you guys. And that's something I'm learning. I'm not him by any means, and I can't be him, but I want to get more like him. But that's one thing he's better at me at. I hope so. I want to be like, let's go change the world right now. You can do it. You can do it. But there is a time for grieving, and there's a time for letting people grieve. But that house was full of wailing and weeping, and Jesus says, no, not today. Some people in this room, there is a time for grieving, but you've grieved long enough. And Jesus is saying, let's get up. Let's get up. Let's get up. And so he kicked all the crying people out of the room. He kicked all the negativity out of the room. And he said, why are you weeping? She's not dead. She's asleep. And I'm finishing. You remember what David said when I told you about the David message, when the enemy took all the people and they could have said, well, they're all dead. But the word of God said not a single one was dead. They were just captured. Your dream's not dead. It's captured. It's asleep. It's asleep. The God dream inside you is just sleeping. And so the crowd laughed at him. The crowd laughed at him. You be the positive one in the room, you'll get some negative comments. There's going to be people laugh at you when you talk about changing the world, when you talk about taking on addiction in this area. They're going to laugh at you. Ha, 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 ha. When you talk about praying for sick people, they're going to laugh at you. And they laughed at him. But Jesus took her by the hand in a loud voice. Loud voice. He said something. We know what he said. He didn't say, thou us get upest. That was written about 1,500 years later for any of you King James only. And I love the King James. I've got more King James Bibles in here than anybody in this room. But that's not what Jesus said. He said, Talitha cum. Talitha cum. That's the words Jesus spoke. Talitha cum. He didn't even speak English. He does today. He speaks all kinds of stuff. But he said, Talitha cum. He said, daughter, my child, get up. Get up. Dreamer. Get up. Get up. Dreamer, get up. Is there a dream in you? Is there a dream in you? I know there's a dream in you too. I know there's a dream in you. And it's not just a set of powerlifting record. That could be a good platform though. It gave my respect. There's a dreamer inside of you that the messenger has said is dead, and there's people around you that want to laugh and mock and cry and keep you dead. They want to keep that dream dead. They don't want you getting up. Because they'd rather you stay miserable than them be alone. Because your happiness convicts them. Your action convicts their others' inaction. If you get up anyway and do it, it convicts others. When you're in a bad place, you want to say negative things about everybody because it makes you feel better about yourself. They're all losers because I'm a loser. It's harder to say, well, they're doing something right. What am I doing wrong, right? That takes a bigger boy. There's a dreamer in you. God is saying, get it up. Get it up. My brother, there's a messenger in your head that has told you it's too late for you. You're too sick. Don't you believe it? Jesus is saying, you're here for a purpose. And you can get that thing up, that dream. You have purpose. You have purpose in your life. Everybody in this room, powerful purpose. No matter where we've come from, it's not gone. It's asleep. It's not dead. It's asleep. And today, God is calling us to get our dreams up. And he's calling the spiritual fathers and the fathers in this room, for those under our watch, let's get those babies grown knowing Jesus. But even those that have no children, let's get these babies in here grown and fulfilling our purpose in Jesus. And I know it's late. Let me just ask you to bow your heads real quick. We're done. I'm so sorry. I did the best I could. It's about a 45-minute message, but we started late. If there's anybody in this room that says, you know what? The devil's told me that my time is past, that it's dead, that my purpose is dead. I don't have that purpose anymore, or I don't feel that purpose, or there's people in my life that tell me that. If there's anybody in this room, be honest and say, I struggle with that. I struggle with that in my head. Is there anybody, nobody looking, to raise their hand right now? I see your hands. I see your hands. Keep them up. Jesus is saying, Talitha cum to you. He's saying, daughter or son, it's not dead. It's not dead. It's asleep. And today I'm calling it to wake up. I'm calling you to wake up. I'm calling dead dreams. They're not dead. They're asleep. I'm saying, sleeper, wake up, oh sleeper. Wake up, oh sleeper. Today is the alarm clock. Today is the alarm clock. We've hit snooze too long. We've hit snooze too long. And today we turn off the phone and we get up and we stand up and we say, devil, not today. Not today. If that's you, dreamers, I want you to stand up and I want you to come forward right now. I want you to come forward. Every sleeping dreamer, come forward right now. Right now. Right now. Right now. No more snooze. No more alarm clock. Today is the day that it arises in you. That you get up. That you get up out of your grave. That you get up out of your bed. Today is your day. And God is calling you forth and saying, come on, son. Come on, daughter. Today. Whose voice shall we hear? Whose voice shall we listen to? Today, let it be Jesus. In Jesus' name. I'm going to let this worship team just play. And people right now, I think dreams are waking up. I think purpose is waking up. I think marriages are waking up. I think happiness is waking up. I think passion is waking up. I think ministry is waking up. Today, let it be your day. And if you don't know Jesus and you want to, and you want some of this, just come forward. Just come forward. If you need to be praying about something, just come forward in Jesus' name. I'm going to let them worship. And right now, if you're back there and you need something, come forward. He's here. He's here.